Audio.
Hello, my sweet lovers of the wind. It is I, Duncan Trussell, and you have tuned into the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. And holy Moses, my friends, I have to report in with you and to you about a magical experiment that I was lucky enough to partake in recently over at the Gelson's Noshing and Imbibing Bar. I know I probably don't have to say this, but this is definitely not sponsored in any way, shape, or form by Gelson's or the Noshing and Imbibing Bar over at Gelson's on Hyperion, but it is important to report the location where we had the final meeting of the Ukrainian branch of the Los Angeles Cacophony Society. You can find out more about this society by going to Reddit.com/r/ublacs. That's U-B-L-A-C-S. But let me just explain what happened. So went to Burning Man, as most of you know by now, got my mind blown, then started doing some research into Burning Man and discovered that Burning Man was at least partially the responsibility, the creation, partially the one of the tributaries that ran into the insane vortex of energy that is currently what we call Burning Man, was a society called the Cacophony Society. Now, as I started reading more and more about these people, I got increasingly fascinated, and I kept hearing one of the members of the Cacophony Society's name, this fellow by the name of John Law. And he and I have been sort of exchanging emails and had a conversation, because hopefully he'll let me interview him for an upcoming podcast. But as part of the research for this interview that I want to do with him, I decided to be part of a Cacophony Society event. Now, I don't think that I will successfully be able to explain what the Cacophony Society really is, because I don't think I understand what it really is. But what I can tell you is some of the events that the Cacophony Society has put on in the past. And not only did they put on Burning Man in the old days, but also they have done things such as the legendary Salmon Run, where members of the society would dress up like salmon and run the wrong direction in 5K races. They also did a legendary massive protest against Disney's Fantasia that seemed so real that it got written up in Time magazine. They also did, I guess one of my favorite of their pranks is they set up clowns on a bus line so that the bus at every single stop picked up a seemingly unrelated clown. They did things such as urban exploration, SantaCon, and God knows what else they have done and possibly continue to do to create this beautiful brand of novelty in the humdrum flow of what we currently call default reality. Apparently, Chuck Palahniuk, who wrote Fight Club, was inspired and was also a member of the Cacophony Society. It sounds like a society of pranksters, which it is, but it's a way, way deeper than that. And a lot of the things that they believe in are, I think, really, really smart. A lot of their tenets are really smart and really beautiful. For example, inclusivity being one of their tenets. The idea is that I think one of their sayings is actually, you may already be a member. Let me just fact check that. Daryl, can you do a Google search on the World Wide Web for me to see if you may already be a member was a saying of the Cacophony Society?
Yes, Master Trussell. Because you have temporarily imprisoned my soul in a Gluckschen Vox, I must do your bidding. But I swear when I escape this place I will rend you limb from limb. I will wear your entrails as a crown as I push your eyeballs into my urethra. Here is your fact check, Master.
Thanks, Daryl.
The Cacophony Society is a randomly gathered network of free spirits united in the pursuit of experiences beyond the pale of mainstream society. 1. It was started in 1986 by surviving members of the now-defunct Suicide Club of San Francisco. 2. Cacophony has been described as an indirect culture jamming outgrowth of the Dada movement and the Situationists. One of its central concepts is the trip to the zone, or zone trip, inspired by the 1979 film Stalker by Andrei Tarkovsky. According to self-designated members of the society, you may already be a member. Now let me rest. My soul burns in this place. I will have my revenge.
You may already be a member. What a glorious saying for a fascinating society. So, I've been talking to John Law a little bit, and I've been quite inspired by this book, Tales of the Cacophony Society. And so, to further research this society, I decided, along with a group of other people, some of who shall not be named, to try to put on something of a cacophonist event at Noshing and Imbibing, which is a bar in the very front of Gelson's. This podcast is in no way sponsored by Noshing and Imbibing or by Gelson's, but it just seemed like that would be a perfect place to have the final meeting of the Ukrainian branch of the LA Cacophony Society. And I tweeted about this because one of the things that I've learned from reading Tales of the Cacophony Society and talking with the great John Law is that inclusivity is a huge part of this. So anyone is invited. And the next time you guys see any tweet related to the Ukrainian branch of the Los Angeles Cacophony Society, know that this is a real thing and not some kind of trick to try to get people just to show up at Gelson's. We were all there and we all wore pajamas. And my friend Brendan Walsh read Tiger Woods' cheat speech, which is about an 11-minute speech. Everybody gave toasts to what the Ukrainian branch of the LA Cacophony Society has meant to them. And then we all sang Frozen together. We sang, "Do You Want to Build a Snowman?" And I don't know why it matters, but here's a clip of all of us singing together in the middle of a Gelson's wearing pajamas.
We used to be best buddies, and now we're not. I wish you would tell me why. Do you want to build a snowman?
It doesn't have to
be a snowman.
No way, Anna!
It was truly one of my favorite nights of all time. The formula these brilliant human beings came up with totally works. And I know when you hear me describing it, maybe it sounds like, I don't know, pathetic or dorky or some kind of like shit, maybe a cry for help or something like that. But when you're in it, when you're in a place like the front of a grocery store wearing pajamas with, I don't know, 10 or 11 people, however many people showed up, singing from Frozen, toasting a society that just came into existence and is ending, at least the Ukrainian branch, and finding yourself among people that maybe you normally would not be hanging out with at a Gelson's on a Monday night, something magical happens. And not just for us, it seemed like the people working at Gelson's thought it was super funny, and even people shopping, it wasn't malicious, it wasn't like it was designed for some political reason, it was just... We were all doing it just to have fun. It was subversive, but it was subversion for no other reason than to sort of join together with a group of people on a Monday night and do something weird. And I don't know. I guess I just don't understand it yet. But I'm definitely going to be doing more of these events with my friends from the new Ukrainian branch of the LA Cacophony Society. And if you want to find out more information about us, or if you want to help us find out more information about us, then you can go to Reddit, the subreddit, reddit.com/r/ublacks. That's U-B-L-A-C-S, the Ukrainian branch of the LA Cacophony Society. And we're going to be posting information about future events. I'll also tweet about it, and I hope if you see a tweet and you live in Los Angeles, you'll come and join us. And if you don't live in Los Angeles maybe you could start your own branch of the Cacophony Society. First, or maybe order their book or do some research so you can understand some of their tenets. They don't really have normal kinds of rules, but there seems to be a never-ending call for a kind of awesome inclusivity. And the idea is you shouldn't really do events to make money, and you shouldn't use events as a place to push your political or religious agenda. But I think other than that, everything goes. And just let me say again, for those of you who may really be longstanding members of the society, I mean no disrespect, and I fully admit that I probably don't understand it at all. But from what I've experienced so far and from the few chats I've had with John Law, I think it's one of the coolest things I've encountered in a really long time. And I hope you guys will come to one of our meetings next time, whoever you may be. All right, pals, we have a blazer of a podcast with psychonaut Aubrey Marcus, fresh in from... To quote Martha Stewart, if you end up with bugs in your mouth, spit them out. In the same way, if your old website is like some spray of ancient carnival puke on the side of an abandoned funhouse, then it's time to torch that ancient old thing. Send the demons running into the hills and replace it with a brand new website by the beautiful lasses, lords, and ladies over at Squarespace.com. Squarespace has all the tools you need to create an aesthetically pleasing, blazing glow of glory to replace that horror story that used to be your website. They've got templates that you can choose from if you're in a hurry. They have shopping carts. They use Stripe so that you can, if you have some beautiful thing that you want to sell to the world, you could do it right away. It's a great way to start your own podcast. Every single website scales to any device. They have fantastic customer service. And if you want an example of what you can build with Squarespace, go to DuncanTrussell.com. That space was created using Squarespace. So if you want to try to build a new website, you don't even need a credit card to give them a trial run. But if you like it, won't you please use offer code Duncan? You'll get 10% off and you'll show Squarespace that you support the DTFH. So give it a shot. It's time for you to build a new website. Do it for your ancestors. Do it for the techno Christ. Also, friends, and I know this is a little bit short notice, but I've been talking about it in past podcasts. This October 8th, I'm going to be doing telling a psychedelic story at the Symposia event. If you want more information about that, you can go to their Twitter page at Symposia. That's at PSYMPOSIA. They've gathered together a group of really interesting people, including one of my favorite humans on planet Earth, someone who I believe deserves a Nobel Prize. Rick Doblin from MAPS will be there telling a psychedelic story as well. So for those of you who live in New York and want to see a show filled with a lot of really cool people talking about psychedelics and who also want to benefit a psychedelic organization like Symposia, then this is the event for you. There'll be links in the comments section of this particular episode. Eternal thanks to those of you who have been using our Amazon portal. Before you head down to some chain store and get horrified by the realization that the entire world is writhing with mucusy toddlers spraying their puke, diarrhea, and varying diseases all over every square inch of anything that exists in the external world, why not go to Amazon.com through our portal located at DuncanTrussell.com? All you got to do is click on the link there, and that will take you to Amazon, where you can get just about any configuration of plastic you need, from a Swiffer to the HTC Vive. It's all there for you at Amazon.com. And if you go through our portal, anything that you buy, they'll give us a small percentage of. It's one of the best ways for you to support the podcast. And much thanks to those of you who continue to use that portal. We also have a great shop located at DuncanTrussell.com. We just got pins in. These are mystically beautiful, shiny pins with the DTFH logo. Check them out. They're super awesome. And finally, might I invite you to come and join us at the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Forum. Just sign up there and say hello. There's a lot of cool people who hang out there, and we have a lot of great conversations, and I would love for you to pay us a visit. I love you guys, and I am very grateful for those of you who continue to listen to my raspy lesbian voice pouring out into the interwebs. May God bless you, your brain, and all things that your sweet feet step upon for the next billion years. Today, we have a fantastic episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. Our guest today is the founder and president of Onnit, a company that produces some pretty incredible stuff. One of my favorite, I guess you call it a vitamin, I don't know what you call it, nootropic, called Alpha Brain. Some delicious stuff that I eagerly consume whenever it's around. If you're somebody who likes to work out or wants to get in shape or transform that asymmetrical body temple of yours into something that actually has the capacity to possibly survive some apocalypse, then I invite you to check out their incredible kettlebell collection. I haven't tried these kettlebells because for the last several months, I've been a pulsating, lazy blob of happiness. But one day, if I ever decide to start swinging kettlebells around in my backyard, perhaps I'll order one of their incredible things. Who knows? Anyway, it's not just Onnit that Aubrey Marcus created. He has also just created an amazing documentary on his spiritual and I guess physical adventure with ayahuasca. So you can check that out too. You can find out everything you need to find out about Aubrey Marcus by going to aubreymarcus.com. All links will be located at duncantrussell.com. And now, please everyone welcome back to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, spiritual adventurer, psychonaut, and warrior poet, Aubrey Marcus. Aubrey Marcus, the last time I encountered you, we are standing in an alternate dimension watching Diplo at Burning Man. What are your thoughts on that, man?
Man, that was a cool experience, right?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't expect much out of that at all. And I think it's one of those things that you hear about it, and maybe even the way you hear about it makes you kind of like reticent. Or maybe it's the fact that I hadn't gone for so long and I was worried that if I really liked it, I'd be mad at myself for not having gone.
Right.
But whatever, I came in with this kind of resistance to it for sure. And then I remember getting there and I was a little freaked out about the dust and I was worried what was going to happen to my lungs and
yep.
like how that was going to affect me. And so I was a little anxious, you know, and we got in and I remember the first moment where it hit me was when it became dusk. And all of the things started to light up. And
yeah.
this world emerged out of this hellish sandstorm
yep.
apocalypse.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, it was like a circus for the imagination and mind yeah. that started yeah. to come alive.
It was like suddenly just like being a fish in some interdimensional coral reef.
Yeah.
It was a whole new thing. You know, this is the temporary autonomous zone. This is like a Bardo or something. It's like the awareness that when you go to a festival, a good one, you get kind of buffeted by some kind of indescribable psychic energy that makes you, I don't know if it's the result of a lot of people being on psychedelics together or the mm-hmm. fact that it's people getting together for something other than like making money, you know, if it's a community thing or whatever it is. But it's like Burning Man seems to be hyper aware of that energy and has really figured out a way to put a magnifying glass in front of it and use it for magic.
It's really hard to describe, like, the expansiveness of it and the accomplishment of human ingenuity that created it. Like, everything is lit up, breathing fire in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, cruising around, how it was different than another festival is you don't see a piece of trash on the ground.
Right.
You know, it's like everybody takes care of this speck of dearth, which is pretty abysmal speck of dearth.
I mean, yeah.
Not a living thing anywhere. Like, one of the few places where there's not a bug, not a bird, not a lizard, not a fucking cricket. There's nothing there. And people keep it immaculate, you know, and it's a really cool thing that's hard to describe.
Well, it's a what's really fascinating, if you go and look at what they're, I think they're still cleaning up. So what they do is they have these teams of people that go from camp to camp to camp, and if they find, let's say, a broken bottle or something that's in a lot of pieces, then they will call 20 people to that spot, and they will sift through the sand like miners looking for gold until it's pure, like, clean again. So, like, they are hardcore. They are OCD level. Nothing is left. And it's nuts. You can look. Go on the Burning Man website and you can look at their reports, because they do reports on the cleanup, because it's such an insane, extensive process that they go through. It's crazy. And they do a map. You know about the Moop map?
No.
So Moop is matter out of place. That's what they call trash there. And so they do a map of all the different campsites, and you could see which campsites are assholes and which people, like, really tried to keep it clean. But, I mean, I remember standing next to you and saying, what do you think of this? And one of your first responses was, there's no trash on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nuts.
That's cool.
That's pretty cool.
And you know one of the best things I took away from it, though? It's like, there was every pleasure imaginable. I mean, girls are half naked. Everything is lit up. The sound is amazing. The air was crisp and clean.
Yeah.
Like, it was every human pleasure available. It was so overboard. Like, everywhere you went was one of the best parties you've ever seen.
Yep.
But what I ended up realizing is the best stuff was just sitting, hanging with my homies.
That's it.
Like, just having some laughs. It's like, it showed you so much and gave you absolutely everything, so that you would know that you could be happy with very little.
That's right.
You know, and that was like this massive thing that I took away. Like, I'm going to give you every opportunity for pleasure, but the thing that you're going to enjoy most is just sitting in your camp, talking to your friends, or going out and meeting somebody and chatting and having some laughs, and the human connection, you know?
Just those conversations you get in. Just like, you get in some of the coolest conversations. And it's the, it also leads to a hope that I have, which is, they talk about the coming Buddha. They say there's going to be another Buddha, another Jesus. There will, you know, human beings produce prophets. This happens. There's undeniably, you can historically, you could see that whether or not they have any kind of real magical powers or not, certain humans emerge into our society that cause massive, massive cultural transformations. No question about it. And that we have names for these people. And I think their names get fancier and more imbued with mythology as time progresses. Mm-hmm. But we call them messiahs, Tathagatas, whatever. But the next one, I think, is not going to be one person. It's going to be a collective.
Yep.
That's the next one. And when I see something like that with a group of people, even temporarily connecting in a way that seems to be causing more benefit than harm to the world, and it's 70,000 people, then that gives me the goosebumps, because I think, wow, this can be done.
Yeah.
This can be done. Even if it's now, it's just a temporary thing. That means that there is the potentiality for some superorganism filled with hedonism.
I think it has to be. I think any time that you've tried to create these martyrs and heroes and messiahs and tried to make them non-human, that's where the system fails.
Yep.
Because you can't identify with that individual. Like, they'll tell the story of Jesus and talk about how he went to the desert for 40 days. Well, what the fuck do you think he was doing in the desert for 40 days? Wrestling with his demons. Wrestling with his desire to fuck everything that moved.
Yeah.
Like, wrestling with all the things that humans wrestle with. But when you mythologize an individual, and we see that happen all the time, then you lose, you know, you end up being disappointed by that person when you find out they're human. Whereas I think the next wave is to recognize our humanness, recognize that, and this was actually part of my recent vision, that we're all pleasure monkeys. Like,
yeah,
we're here in this monkey suit to experience as much pleasure as possible. And some of us are going to get pleasure from weird places, like weird areas.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Right.
You know? Like, it's all good. We're all part human. We all have negative tendencies. We all have positive tendencies. But collectively, if we choose love and choose consciousness, that's what matters.
Yeah. And you know, if we are pleasure monkeys, then what is the most pleasurable thing? I mean, outside of like blasting cum or like super powerful MDMA when you finally like come on ecstasy, like it's like climbing fucking some terrible mountain and you're, I did it. Holy shit. It's great. Okay, fine. The, you know, the, what is that? Second chakra stuff. But then when you get to like, what is really pleasurable? There's other high levels of pleasure. For example, rebellion, like successfully overcoming some internal or external obstacle is incredible. But then even above that, what is the greatest feeling, man? And it's such a cheesy thing, but it's the greatest feeling is when you successfully rob some motherfucker and take his money, Aubrey. No, the most, no, the most, when you put the gun to his head and you get his wallet.
And hear the lamentations of the women.
Yeah, right. No. The most, but there are, what's really funny about that is there are actually songs that celebrate that kind of bullshit. All I want to do, dum-dum-dum-dum.
Yeah.
What is it? This is the sound of a gun thing going, and take your money. It's so sad and fucked up, but that's a great song. You know the one I'm talking about. I can't sing. Anyway, the point is, the true pleasure, and this is what I got from Burning Man, is giving. That is it. If you want to feel great, man, if you really want to feel good, then just find some person who needs help and help them. Mm-hmm. It's so simple, basic, but the evolutionary math behind it makes a whole lot of fucking sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. There's this word that I've learned recently, and it's called compersion. And it's a word in which it's beyond compassion. Compassion is you want something good for somebody, you know, and that's a drive. Like you want to sympathize and empathize and you want something good. Compersion is where you actually get pleasure from someone else's pleasure.
Yeah.
Right? And that's to me like the highest form of consciousness. It's collapsing this duality mindset and saying like, oh, your pleasure is my pleasure.
Yeah.
You or me living a different life. So when you're fucking stoked, I'm fucking stoked.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the altruistic aspect of giving. You know, because there can be other aspects of giving. I've seen it in Africa. I've seen people who love being the kind of messiah figure, like, come worship me, children. I can give you so many things.
Yeah.
And it's this power trip. But when it's truly, truly pure, it's compersion. It's you're getting pleasure from someone else's pleasure. Their laughter, whether you caused it or not, is something that you enjoy.
And it's the sense of merging. It's like when you're with a group of people and you got to survive. A lot of bullshit goes out the window real quick, right? And when you're in that kind of place and you're like, man, we're just here surviving together. And like, what I have is yours and what you have is mine because we're all one thing right now. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, that feels cool, man. That is, and it shouldn't. What's really interesting is that feels good in the same way, probably in a place where there's been a famine for generations and someone has a full stomach for the first time in a lifetime. They're probably like, what the fuck is this feeling, man? Like, it's an alien feeling, you know? I'm full. You know, like, it's that. It's like there is a famine. There is a cultural famine, which is that we are starving to share. And we don't even know that's what the starvation is. They've reversed the goddamn circuitry of the motherboard of civilization so that the energy's flowing the wrong way to the individual instead of out of the fucking individual. This is what you talked about last time when we talked about
being the sun.
Yeah.
That's the best metaphor for love is just being the sun. The sun does not decide which trees it shines on, which ones are worthy and not worthy. I'll give you this if you do this for me. It just fucking shines equally on everything.
Yeah.
Like that's real love. That's pure love. And that's
pure love.
That's something that I think if you're going to pursue anything, pursue the cleanest love you can. Pursue that type of love with your partner, with whoever, that no matter what they do, no matter whether you think they deserve it or not, you know that they're worthy of love, that we're all worthy of love. And that's like, that's that kind of Christ consciousness that they talk about.
Yes.
You know, that's the purest form that you can get to.
And also, remember, it's the effort And then it's the, as Sharon Salzberg says, the healing is in the return. So it's like, okay, look, you're going to try this thing, this idea, whatever it is, the thing that you're going to try to be a more giving, be the son. And guess what? It's not going to work.
Yeah, you're going to fail a lot.
A lot.
All the time. Someone's going to piss you off. You're going to retract your love. The sun's going to go dark like an eclipse.
Yeah.
You know, you're just going to be pouring pure darkness. And that's going to hurt them. And that pain that you cause will feel good because it'll feel like justice.
Vengeance.
You deserve power. That. I will remove the sun from your life. How do you like that? That'll show you.
Yeah.
And that's a demonic kind of mindset. And not in like the, like you have a demon in you, but that's the opposite of love. And demonic meaning a delusional mindset. The delusion is that that person you're not showing love is separate from you. That somehow you're not doing that to yourself. Somehow by retracting your love from them, you're not also retracting that love from yourself. So that's delusional.
Neutron star versus sun, right? Like a neutron star is this tiny little ball, a selfish fucking mass that anything that gets around it just gets destroyed in its gravity. Like whatever the thing is, you could throw a toaster at a neutron star and apparently when it hits, it's going to hit with the power of a nuclear bomb because the fucking thing is so like dense that anything that gets sucked into it gets annihilated. And it's like, well, anything that gets sucked into the sun, I guess that gets annihilated too. So maybe it's not the best analogy, but the point is you can feel when you suck.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like you suck as a person. Literally, you can feel like, oh, I'm sucking right now. Like, I'm sucking.
You're in black hole mode. You're drawing in the light from your surroundings, funneling it to some place where it never reaches anything positive, where no plants grow.
Give me all.
More.
I will have all.
This more.
Is my world and all shall be. It's so funny. You become Sauron in the Lord of the Rings, you know, with your stupid Tower of Justice. Now, so you left Burning Man.
Yeah.
And then what did you do?
I went to Peru. I went to Peru to do some ayahuasca and huachuma. So interestingly enough, because I know, you know, a lot of people want to hear this story because it's a pretty wild one. But the story starts even before Burning Man. I had this trip planned to Peru and I was bringing a lot of friends and family down there to do some ayahuasca. And for me, that's really
when
the big
family,
part of it.
You say family, what do you mean? Which family?
My chosen family, really. You know, like the people who are so close to me that they're like brothers and sisters.
Right,
you know?
Okay, gotcha.
But I have brought my sister down there before. That's actually out in the documentary that I just released. My sister's in that one.
Oh, wow, cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. But anyways, so I had this trip planned, but I hadn't really been paying attention to the dates. So I'm sleeping one night. And I'd wake up from sleep with a start. And in my dream, there was this demon that came to me and said, just stone-faced, I'm going to kill you on September 23rd. And I just woke up like that. Like it was, I've never had a dream like that in my life.
Just check the date on my calendar when you said that. You're cool.
Yeah. So I opened up my phone. I said, fucking September 23rd. That was really precise. And I looked at it and it was during the time I was going to be in Peru. Then I looked at the schedule. That was the night I was drinking ayahuasca.
Wow.
So I was like, fuck. So I tried to do a little work. Like I went into meditation, trying to sort it out, but I couldn't really figure out what that meant. So, you know, went through Burning Man, had a good time, whatever. But I had this kind of idea looming that ayahuasca session was going to be significant, right? So fast forward to the jungle, and I'm getting ready for ceremony. There's a lot of stuff going on. I'm kind of sorting to other people. And I didn't really get to prepare like I would have wanted, you know, for potentially this epic battle where a demon told me that he was going to try and kill me that night. So anyways, I get in and it starts off, I drink the cup and it starts off super mellow. Like I start seeing a lot of flower scenes and jungle scenes. It's actually where I came up with that pleasure monkey idea because I had a vision of this jungle shrine and there was this super happy monkey and it was like a homage to this monkey human and carved, etched in stone. It said, we are the pleasure monkey.
Okay, that's cool.
And there was like butterflies going through and it was just, there was like creatures having sex and eating fruit. And it was just like this Eden kind of concept. Like we are the pleasure monkeys. Like that's what we're here for. I was like, oh, cool. And meanwhile, it felt like what I call the little doctors. They have songs. They call it Doctorcito in all the Icaros.
I remember you telling me about the little doctors.
The little doctors. Yeah. They were like going through my brain and they were like fixing things and they were just kind of telling me to chill out. And I really thought, I was like, oh, well, maybe this is going to be super chill. You know, maybe that was just a dream. Dreams happen. Just a dream. Like, don't stress. So I was thinking everything was pretty cool. And that was about an hour. And I was like, man, I'm in the clear here. And then right out of my left-hand side of my vision, in the most clear form of any vision I've ever had, was this golem-looking, schmiegel-looking, nasty, gnarly demon. Like one of the things out of like one of the vampire movies, with like a bald head and ears and
a Nosferatu.
Nasty. Yeah, like a Nosferatu, exactly. Like a gnarly one, like one of the hybrid ones that they bred with something else to make it even more fucked up.
Sure.
So this schmiegel-looking thing, Nosferatu, is over to my left. And, you know, really as part of my philosophy, what I tell everybody is to surrender to your own invincibility, to recognize that we all carry a piece of the all, a piece of the source, the one source that collapses together at the start of the Big Bang, expands into differentiation, creates multiple perspectives of the one being, but we have our piece and that piece is invincible. So if you surrender to your own invincibility, no matter what comes, you'll be safe. And that's my mantra going in. Like, as long as I surrender to my invincibility, I hold in my heart this piece of the infinite, this piece of the divine, this piece of the all that we all carry. All life carries that piece. And that's mine, and it's indestructible. And I recognize that the darkness is necessary to create duality. It's necessary to create life. It's necessary for free will. If there was no resistance, we would all reach enlightenment immediately.
Yes.
And the game would be boring. It's a video game with no monsters.
Right.
So I have a lot of love and respect, and I think I talked about this also in one of our previous shows, the respect for the darkness, like the ability to hold down that side of the polarity, to allow a force of resistance that we could strive against, you know, the...
A lot of work.
Yeah, the whetstone that we can sharpen our sword, you know, and it has to be equal to our best efforts to allow free will, otherwise the game is tilted, you know? So anyway, so I see this demon, and my move is, I've tried to fight with them before, it never works, they always fuck me up. You can't fight with them. I just send them love and appreciation. Say, hey, we're all consciousness. Yes. We're all part of duality. You're necessary and I love you and I appreciate you for that. So I tell that to this golem-looking schmiegel and he just jumps on my neck and starts fucking chewing on my neck. Wow. Gave zero fucks about the love that I was trying to show it.
Right.
And he starts eating, and this is all in my vision, of course. He starts eating down my neck and he's trying to eat towards my heart. And I do a visualization where I have this brilliant white light in my heart, which is the center of my consciousness. I like to move my consciousness from my head, because the head can get swirly with thoughts and fears and doubts. Move it to my heart, where the love is. So I have that vision, and I could see he's trying to eat his way towards that peace in my heart.
Yeah.
And so the mantra, surrender to your invincibility, I was like, oh, you want that thing? Go ahead, take it. And as soon as I said, go ahead, take it, he goes and he grabs it, and he runs. The moment he grabbed that piece, I felt like I got shot with a sniper bullet.
Wow.
Like I went completely dead. Just like my body went limp, like sheer terror and emptiness.
Took your soul.
Took my soul. That's what it felt like. Like immediately at that. And I was like, oh my God, I fucked up. I just gave this demon my soul. And I was thinking, maybe that's why they say in vampire, maybe you have to invite them in. Maybe the only way he could get it is if I gave it to him. And I gave it to him. So sheer panic at that point, right? And one of the scariest moments of my life. But I also, I've been in difficult, challenging positions before in vision. And I've always known that you can choose faith and choose love and make it out of any situation. So I had this other voice saying, nah, Aubrey, he can't take that. If he did, he'll grow it back. It's yours. Like, you're fine. So I had these two voices, one of sheer terror. I just gave away my soul and I'm dead and I'll be dead eternally. And the other one saying, no, man, you're going to be all right. Like, have faith. So I start negotiating with this schmiegel who's somewhere in my vision kind of cackling and like moving around. I was like, can I have it back? Like, I love you. I appreciate what you did there, but I'd really like that thing back.
Yeah.
And he's like, sure, I'll give it back. And I didn't really look at what he was giving me. And he gave me this dead ass rock, like this stone, but I greedily put it back in my chest. And it was like, it was dead. It wasn't alive.
Whoa.
And he starts laughing at me like, ha, 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 I tricked you. You know, I was like, I'm not giving it back. I was like, fuck. So again, there's that voice of faith and that voice of just sheer terror, like I'm completely fucked. And somehow, so he goes and he moves away and he runs and he's basically at that point bringing it to his boss, bringing my soul to his boss. And his boss, I liken to the world crusher. Like if I'm not a religious guy, you know, but this is what the Bible would call the devil.
Sure.
Like if the magnitude of this being, this entity, this capital R resistance, the accumulation of all darkness, the polarity of all resistance, was so massive. It was like he was crushing worlds, like entire worlds were getting crushed in his hand. And it was just power and fire and red and horns and the eyes blazing. And he had my soul at that point because the Schmeagol guy gave it to him. And I was like, this is really fucked.
Yeah.
Like, this is like, I couldn't even communicate with this thing because it was so big. So my initial instinct was like, I got to make myself bigger so I can at least have a conversation with the World Crusher. But I couldn't make myself that big. The World Crusher was too big. He had universes in his hands that he was demolishing. So I'm thinking in this conundrum, like no communication's available. I'm too small. I'm this little speck and the World Crusher has my soul. And I just get an idea and I go back to that idea of appreciation and love for an entity that will hold down the darkness to allow duality to exist. And the understanding that ultimately all of that will collapse as the universe collapses and it'll be one again and unity will exist, expanding out back to duality. So with that, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to send the World Crusher as much love as I can. And I just started pushing as much love as I could. And in my imagination, I kissed him right between the forehead, like right between the eyes, like right on the forehead. So I kissed him on the forehead and his eyes turned like emoji heart googly eyed for a second. He just, the World Crusher's eyes just went, and he had like this little silly smile and these little hearts in his eyes. And for one moment, there was like a relenting and he communicated with me, says, "Don't worry, Aubrey, we can't take your heart. That's yours." And it was like, as his eyes were googly, you know, from that one unexpected move, I had like this moment of relinquishing and I was like, whew. Like,
right.
Okay. I'm all right.
Yeah.
And I thought at that point, I was like, no, man, maybe me and resistance are cool. Maybe me and the dark side are cool. So at that point, I started kind of seeing the influence of delusion in society, the rules that we make, the separation of nations, the ability that we can make one person seem worse than us so that we can do things that aren't out of love to that person and all the ways that in our inside ourselves and society, inside myself, all the darkness that's within us all, and exploring that and exploring relationships that I'd had. And at that point, I was kind of thinking that my big battle was over. Still a little shaky, though. But I get to, and I won't mention exactly who, but a member of my family who's really having trouble with some mental issues.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, and he's having some very dark, dark fantasies. So at that point, I'm thinking about that, and I go back to who I thought was kind of loosely, maybe we were okay, like we were on good terms, the World Crusher.
Yeah.
So I go to the World Crusher, and I say, what do you think about, you know, maybe letting him go? You know, what do you think about that? And it was like an eruption from the sea, like a leviathan came and wrapped me in these tentacles, the World Crusher changed form, wrapped me in all these tentacles and goes, "I'll make you a deal, your soul for his." Like super evil.
Wow.
Like super, no longer were we cool. Whatever just happened with the googly eyes, that shit was done. Like, he was taking his job super seriously at this point. And I was like, whoa. Like, whoa, I don't know about that. He's like, "I thought you were invincible. I thought you could do anything. I thought you could surrender to your invincibility. I thought you carried the divine."
Yeah.
It starts fucking with my head. He's like, "Don't you love this person? Don't you love them? Wouldn't you be willing to sacrifice your soul for his?" And I was like, whoa. And that was a really, really hard position because I do love this family member immensely. And some part of me wanted to be like, "I'll do anything for you," you know, like that's love. But some part of me was like, "I can't fucking make that deal."
Right.
Like, I just can't do that. So I, you know, after a long deliberation and him taunting me in my head, basically all the ways he could, you know, tell me I was weak for not wanting to make the deal, I retracted and said, "You know what? I love you. I appreciate you. That's a deal that you have with him. You know, that's between you two. I've tried, you know, but I'm not going to make that deal. You know, that's something I can't do." And then like slowly the tentacles like unwind from me and go back. But I am seriously shook up at this point. Like, I mean, I've done ayahuasca a lot and never have I been this fucking shook up.
Let me tell you something, Aubrey. The next time I do fucking ayahuasca, I'm doing it with a lawyer. The next time I do ayahuasca, I'm going in there with someone who can negotiate deals better than me. Because, like, I don't know that, like, at that point I would just be like, I'm fucking high, man. Why are you trying to do some kind of metaphysical goddamn... what are you doing with these souls?
Yeah.
Number, like, Do you eat them? Are you collecting them? Do you sell them on eBay? That'd be amazing if you went on eBay and found his thing.
The dark, dark web.
Three fresh human souls gathered in the jungles of Peru.
Taken voluntarily.
So here
free,
you
go. Free trade.
I mean, this is what they sing about in blues songs, man. This is the crossroads.
The devil
deal.
Went down to Georgia. Yeah, you know, this is the classic. It was unbelievable. And again, this is all my visions. You don't have to say like this is real, like I really encountered the devil. This is my vision.
One of the things Aleister Crowley says is that we use these terms for convenience, just because like if we wanted to, we could do, you know, you could say, okay, this is like some kind of like part of your inner psyche, but it's just fun to like for the sake of convenience, and it's also more colorful anyway.
Yeah, totally.
So you met the devil on ayahuasca, and the devil wanted you to do a soul trade to save your friend.
Yeah. So then I thought I'm really shaky at this point, and I'm like, God, can I get some fucking help out here? Like Jesus, you want to come in, make an appearance? You want to make a cameo here?
Yes.
And so. And I couldn't seem to communicate with any of the light side. Like no helpers, no allies, no spirit guides, no fucking homies that I can usually count on in the astral space to kind of come help me out. Nothing. But I kept meditating on Jesus because this was taking a very like Christian oriented turn. So I start meditating on Jesus, and finally this image of Jesus comes, not paying any attention to me, but the image of Jesus comes and it meets the World Crusher, and they immediately turn into gay lovers. Like straight gay lovers making out and hooking up. And it was like a little bit moment of like comic relief. Like, oh, well, of course, I guess how would that work? And then Jesus was able to morph into like a woman and a man. And it was just getting, you know, it was just the perfect yin yang, the dark and the light meeting. But instead of being enemies where you constantly look at them fighting, they were lovers.
Right.
You know, they loved each other because they both held the extreme polarity. It was the ultimate good girl, bad boy, kind of, or in this case, good boy, bad boy, kind of meaty. But
God and God's consort.
Right.
God always has a, you know, there's Radha and there's Krishna, you know, and Radha is the, is Krishna's eternal lover.
Mm.
And their orgasm creates the universe. So
that,
you know, there you are witnessing the polarities and you're seeing what's really going on, you know? What Jesus was really doing in the desert.
Yeah, so it was kind of like a cool moment of like at least like I got a chance to chuckle and like a chance to chill as I watched this gay love affair happen, but I was still like reaching because I was still shaky as fuck. I mean, I just had to deny a trade that could have, in my vision, you know, helped my family, and he's been tricking me and I'm stealing stuff, and it's been tenuous at best. So I keep meditating and I'm trying to get some force of light to help me out, and I hit this really faint connection. You know, like nothing like how strong the connection was when I saw the Schmeagle guy, but a faint connection, a faint voice is like, okay, Aubrey, you've been through a lot. I have something for you. And out in my vision, this red stone comes in. It was the most beautiful ruby red stone I've ever seen. And it was just brilliant. And I was like, and it's like, put this in your heart. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I was always imagining it white, but I guess red works. You know, it's your heart. It's red, you know. So I put it in and immediately I can feel something is wrong. Like, I just feel this hunger for more power. It starts to consume parts of me, and I just want more and more, and I'm thinking thoughts of power, and I'm like, oh, shit, that's not what belongs there. Like, I got tricked again, so I pull it out, and I hear, like, the laughter of the World Crusher come in, and he'd played a trick masquerading as the divine giving a gift, but instead it was a gift of power. It was like the ring from Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah.
So then I have this in my vision and I can't get rid of it. It's like there, this red stone of power, of darkness. And I'm like, what the fuck do I do with this thing? Because I can't get it out of my vision. So I try to put it in this like imaginary place inside my imagination that's like this beautiful stream and this mountain. And I was like, I'll put it there. I'll put it in this place. I'll bury it.
Yeah.
Immediately everything dies. Everything's
right.
Like the water turns sour. The air turns filthy. The plants. I was like, fuck, I got to take it out of there. I can't destroy that world.
Yes.
You know, so I was like, and I hear this voice, just put it back in your heart. You can hold it. You can hold it. You're invincible, remember? Only you have the strength to hold that. Put it back in your heart. And I was like, fuck, maybe that's the right place. So I put it back. Bad idea. Feel just horrible, like nauseous. And at that time also, like the shamans who were singing the Icaros, it's very uncommon for them to start purging, but they're kind of filtering a lot of the energy in the room. They start like viciously, violently vomiting.
Whoa.
So at the same time, I'm like, hey guys, like I know there's a lot of heavy energy in here. I'm thinking this in my imagination, like we're going to be all right. We're going to be all right. I'm still trying to hold faith, but it's just blind faith at this point. Cause I really got shook because I just got tricked again. I got tricked with, you know, this being saying that he was giving me a gift that was coming from the light, but it was really just a gift from the darkness. So I'm seriously mind
fucked. So it's like this darkness is radiating out into the shamans around you who are puking, who are like trying to
hold it, trying to move it, trying to contain
it. They can feel it. Wow.
Yeah. So they're puking in their buckets, which they do ayahuasca all the time. They don't purge very often anymore. And then smoking their mapachos. And I know I have to do something with a stone because also all my friends and other people I love are in the room. Like I want this energy out of the room.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking like, what the fuck do I do with it? I can't put it back in myself. I can't put it in this world. And then I had the idea, the only way to get rid of it is to dissolve it entirely into the whole cosmos, into all of the universe, into all of creation. The only thing that can hold a stone of that power is everything.
Right.
You know, and which is really kind of, again, like that Lord of the Rings metaphor. It has to go back to the place from whence it came. It was drawn together and condensed from the darkness of the universe. The only place that could hold it is the universe itself. So I did that, dissolved it, and it went back into the universe. And I was like, whew. And it worked. And it was out of my vision. And I'm just sitting there, just shook as fuck. The voice of faith is getting twisted and tortured in my mind. But I kept it. I just decided, like, you know what? I believe that I will be able to discern the light from the dark. I will get out of this. You know, I will be okay. Like, I'm going to make it through. And at just that moment of faith and love, and I just sat there. And I could feel, you know, I didn't really have much hope necessarily. Just was just like, I'm just going to hold this faith and love as long as I can. And then whap, I have this thing slap onto my chest. And it's this brilliant, like platinum breastplate with this giant fire opal stone, like diamondine light, like the light of all creation condensed into this beautiful fire opal, like right on my chest. Boom. And I feel this thing come onto my head like a little helmet with another third eye fire opal stone. Boom. And then all of a sudden I feel wings sprout out from my back and I'm flying through the air, and surrounding me are like all of the eagles and all the angels, and it's pure blue sky. And it was just like the best feeling ever.
Victory.
Yeah. And it came, and it was like, it was all of the beauty and love and light and life and just flying. I remember I had a bunch of people ask me, like, why were you flapping your wings? But for like 30 minutes, I was just going, flapping my wings up and down in the ceremony. And that was the conclusion of my fucking gnarliest battle of my life.
You know what's fascinating about ayahuasca is how you can see how religions respond. You could see how, like, what you went through is a different version of this very same story you hear again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
Faced by the demon in whatever cultural form it takes.
Yeah.
You were raised in the West, so you got a Lucifer.
Yeah.
If you were raised, you know, if you maybe you come from India, or maybe you're going to see a different being, you know,
multiple arms or whatever whatever the thing is.
But there it is, the impenetrable, the thing beyond negotiation comes to you, fucks with your head in some form or another. And if you successfully overcome whatever it is, in this case, it's this, you're dealing with, like, I've run into that thing you're talking about. I mean, nothing is picturesque and beautiful as this. I mean, this is a thing that, like, you gotta, you know, one of the things I love about Alex and Allison Gray is they're really good at bringing these visions into the world through painting, you know, and you just brought it through in a story, which is really cool. But I mean, this is a beautiful thing that you'd like to see, but or I would like to see. But that stone, right? That thing. I've had different names for that thing, and you know, if I'm on a maybe like let's say I had taken like a high dose of LSD or something, and it's like this. It's the like if your ego were like a tent. or if your ego, let's say it was a hot air balloon, mm-hmm. then it would be this one fucking stake hammered into the ground that is holding you down from experiencing expansiveness. You feel your ego as the coiled inner, like the muscle spasm, the core of a muscle spasm.
Sure.
It's just fucking unrelenting thing that won't let go. It just won't let go. And it's you can't negotiate with it. It's just this is you.
It's equal to your very best effort, and it will use all means necessary to resist you.
As they say, a broken machine cannot fix itself. And so when you run into this thing, the very act of trying to fix it is it responding to itself. So the thing is like manifesting itself by trying to fix itself, which then manifests itself by trying to like heal itself. So the thing continually is like absorbed into itself. And so what you did is actually something when I did a podcast with Jack Kornfield, who's this Buddhist teacher. And I was talking about this. I was really depressed and I was talking about it. And he was like, well, how big, he said something along the lines of like, well, how big is your suffering, Duncan? Is it the size of the earth? And I'm like, it's galaxies big. And he's like, okay, galaxies big. Now what's around it? What's around those galaxies, right? And then suddenly you're like, oh, yeah. My suffering is being held in the arms of infinity.
Yeah,
it's being held in the great universal mind that is so much bigger than anything could ever be because it's boundaryless. It has no boundaries. Mm-hmm. So no matter what the fucking horn thing wants to sling into your heart, it's like, it doesn't matter.
No.
Because that thing, you know, is that poor thing, by the way, poor thing. Mm-hmm. Theoretically, this being that you encountered is more trapped than a human is. It doesn't have any kind of free will for whatever reason, or it's whatever the thing mythologically that is it's just that's what it
or,
does.
Or it is a deep choice that it has to make to hold that down because it must hold that down for creation. Like it is, it, you can also look at it as a choice of love to be hated and be despised and to hold all of the hate for the world.
Right.
And still choose that, knowing that no one will ever love you. Everyone will try to fight you. And still, of course, there's the pleasure of that, you know, the dark pleasure of the power. But understanding you're sheltering yourself from the greatest thing in the universe, which is love and giving. Like, as you said, you're choosing a life that is going to be difficult. And that's a framework that I got actually in a previous ceremony was a choice for the darkness. The being of the darkness chose that ultimately out of love and out of sacrifice, knowing that he'll never feel the best thing in the universe.
Oh, that's sad. Yeah. And that's also very compassionate. I'm sure you've heard this. This is that Mark Twain quote. But who prays for Satan, who in 18 centuries has had the common humanity to pray for the one sinner that needed it most? You should pray for the devil, you know,
and
sympathy for the devil.
Yeah. But know that it takes its job fucking seriously. And that was like, I think that's the lesson for me. Like, send it love, but don't think it's your homie. Like, it's going to play its job for real. I was shocked that I got that momentary lapse. And I think, you know, obviously this is playing with my own imagination, but it was such a surprise move that it for 1 second, you know, it relinquished its job. And maybe that's what I needed, because if it didn't, I would have been so fucked I couldn't overcome it. And I really feel like ayahuasca gives you just enough that you can overcome. Like, it doesn't give you so much that you can't make it. And maybe I needed that little bit, you know, needed just a little bit, or I would have been lost.
Well, what we're trying to do, it seems like, I mean, this is like one of the great philosophical problems you hear over and over again. If there is some creative force in the universe, then why does evil exist? This is one of the big questions. Like, okay, so if there's an omnipotent creative force in the universe and evil exists, or at least in this particular node of the time-space continuum, there's different examples. There's actually a great, it's on YouTube. I'll try to find the link and send it to you. There's a fantastic example being some creature laying in the middle of a post-forest fire forest that has just been burnt enough to almost die, laying there, just kind of just in the most excruciating pain a being can be in. Let's say a baby squirrel, something that has done no wrong, is laying gasping for its last breaths after its mother and whatever its neurology allowed it to feel any connection to is incinerated, laying there and slowly dying in the vastness of some burnt out forest, which we know must happen again and again and again and again and again and again. In fact, there's a hilarious, you know, the onion has a branch of the onion called shit. It's a clickbait. They make fun of clickbait. And they're like, we put a falcon in a room with a rabbit. Guess what happened? And they're like, well, the thing that's been happening for 2,000 years, for infinity happened. The rabbit was eaten by the fucking falcon, because that's how it works in this dimension. Things are ripped to shreds by other things, devoured, and those things feel fucking pain. No matter how much you want to fantasize that when the lion's jaws clench down upon the antelope, that it goes into some nice neurological euphoric state of like, ooh, I'm being eaten by a lion, this is great. No, it's feeling fucking pain. So this is the example given, which is, all right, if we have an omnipotent creator that has somehow, this is a representation of this omnipotent creator's desire, then when you're sitting down with that omnipotent creator at dinner, you might want to be like, hey, what about those fucking squirrels that, or another way to put it would be that fantastic William Blake poem. You know that poem? Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forest of the night. What immortal hand or eye did frame thy fearful symmetry? What the fuck would make that goddamn thing, right? Yeah. Who did that? So we come to this point where that stone that you're talking about, which I think you could say this is the problem of evil in the universe, original sin, whatever you want to call it. How do we fucking deal with this goddamn thing? This is matter and antimatter, Aubrey. This is without, like what you're saying is we must have it to exist, and some being must hold down the fort, right? And yet, is it true? Do we need it to exist?
I think 100% we do, because it's like that's truly what allows free will. And I'm a firm believer that we have free will. I firmly believe we can give it up, but I believe that's what makes this game special. Like, that's what makes it worth playing.
Yeah.
Is the fact that there are stakes. There's pain and pleasure. There's, you know, reward, and there's... and
binaries.
Exactly. Like, we must have that to make this game interesting. It's what allows the expression of all of these things. It allows growth. It allows struggle. It allows... like, if we're sitting there saying, let's make the best fucking game we possibly can, we have to have a force of resistance. We have to have monsters that we have to clear out of the spooky castle. Like, we have to, or the game is boring as fuck and nobody wants to play it.
Or, and what I like to fantasize about is we get an operating system upgrade that allows us to start playing a game that's no longer based on binaries. That maybe, just maybe, and this is where it gets really fun. Now, here's what we know. Nothingness becomes somethingness. That happened. There's no question about it. Apparently, there was a nothing that became a something, or something that really wasn't a nothing. It was a compressed something that expanded and continues to expand in all that is. But the idea is, wait, maybe there's a third option that doesn't involve the overcoming of the darkness, or the darkness overcoming you, in this wonderful game of arm wrestling that all living things have apparently been having since organic life shot out of planet Earth. And theoretically, this is in all planets and all solar systems. It certainly, or whatever, wherever it is. The thing is, wait, this is what I like about what Terrence McKenna talks about, is there maybe there's the potential for novelty, which means that something bigger than this game, something that we haven't yet wrapped our brains around, because it's something that somehow is a thing where who the fuck knows what it is. And this is why they call it the singularity. We can't get to it. We don't know what's... when you run into Lucifer, sweet, sweet Lucifer, very funny being. When you run into that creature, you know what you've got in common with it? you're both forced to exist in a state of having some embodied self, some sense of self, right? Yet this, the idea is that, like, so this means, this is what they asked the Dalai Lama. One of my favorite weird answers he gave, he's a really funny guy too, but one of the things that he, they asked him about, like, what about, like, spirits, entities? Are these real angels, devas, demons? And he's like, yes, but they're subject to the same problems that all sentient beings are subject to. Old age, disease, and death, right? So you run into fucking old fucking horned shit fuck who's like swapping souls with stones. He's got like emoji slot machine eyes. This thing that's like fucking with everyone's head. And the next time you meet him, say, hey, guess what? You're going to die too. How does that feel, bitch?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? You're impermanent too. I'm impermanent too. And, you know, and that's why I love this.
We're impermanent and permanent because we are all part of the singularity. And I firmly believe, and only because I've seen this also in vision and it made sense to me, I've seen the universe expand. I've seen what you would call God, which is the all light, all of the light, all of the souls, all of the energy, everything compressed to a single point. It's the singularity. It's God as one.
Yahweh.
One perspective. One. No, that's a fucking amalgamation of a father gone bad, right?
Oh, but, yeah. I don't mean it like that. I mean like what they meant when they said that.
Yeah. But like it's the everything. It's the everything contained, and it's one perspective. One perspective at that point.
Yes.
And that's the collapse of universe before the Big Bang. And we're all going back there. And it's like a heartbeat. That's ultimately the destination for all things. Like all living things will ultimately find death. That is where everything is headed. Eventually, the momentum of the universe expanding runs out of energy. And it starts to go back and collapse upon itself until all of the light collapses back to the single point. And for once at that moment, you know, God is the one perspective. And then boom, all of that energy expands back out, infinite perspectives or whatever. So, you know, I think, but we all carry a piece of that and we're all going back, but this is an opportunity to fucking play in the best cosmic game available, knowing that we're all going back home. And that's why it's a game.
The going back home thing, you know, and I have subscribed to this for most of my life, the cyclical nature of the universe, the inhalation and exhalation of Brahman, the sort of like the universe has this respiratory function and we happen to be an exhale, the inhale will happen. And then whenever that happens, time starts over again. But I like to think about a third possibility, man, which is that something different from that happens. This binary, this like there is a zero and a one and then a zero and a one. We inhale, we exhale. We are, you know, this, I think one thing people might be missing, or I certainly have, is one aspect of the universe that I think is just pretty incredible, which is that sometimes pure novelty happens. Sometimes stuff happens that's like brand new, brand new. And that is pretty fucking cool because it's like, really? Guess what? You're not going home. We're not doing this again.
Sure.
We're going to do so. And who knows? The way that that's communicated might be in some hyperdimensional language where, you know, what we are as a species and and not just as a species, but as things composed of matter come into contact with a true alien, an alien that doesn't come from this universe, an alien that comes from something else that we didn't even know could even possibly exist. And that communication, you know, that communication, when that happens, maybe that's another Big Bang. Or they say that, like, you know, the Big Bang is a white hole or whatever. And we get, so in that way, because we think, oh, the alien comes in a ship. No, maybe the alien comes in something that's alien, you know? You know, you've heard this before.
Yeah,
something
that flies
in the face of all of, not the religions of the world, but flies in the face of our understanding of the very nature of reality. Something that flies in the face of all potential and ever, all potential thoughts and all thoughts that have been thought before. Something that flies in the face of all of that so that it hasn't been thought of yet. It hasn't and never will be thought of because it can't be thought of because it's outside of thought. Wow. I love to imagine that, Aubrey.
That's like when you go down a porn rabbit hole and you find something really kinky and interesting that you can vibe off of. But for me, I like doing that and I think it's a fun exercise and I like imagining that. But for me, it's a failure to grasp that all things are contained in the all.
Yeah.
It's like the infinite is the infinite, and there is novelty because belief is constantly creating and things are quantum. It's one and zero at the same time, allowing for infinite possibilities based upon belief, based upon imagination, but all of that is contained in the all. You can't escape the all.
Now,
you can't outrun the eagle of the all.
Here's what's really,
whose wings encompass all things.
There's a great quote. I'll try to remember it. I spent a long time trying to memorize. I was reading this great book about Christianity, stoned out of my mind. I underlined the fucking thing, like read it like 8 times out loud, and I still can't remember, but I'll try to regurgitate it, which is God is a circle where the center is everywhere and their circumference is nowhere. So I think it was St. Augustine who said that. You guys can look it up to see the actual fucking quote.
That's fucking awesome.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But again, you know, we use words like circumference, or we use words like held, or we use words because we have to use words words themselves are containers, right? Mm-hmm. So everything that we cannot really speak of the uncontained. Mm-hmm. You know, we can try. Now, you know, this rabbit hole that I'm going down, by the way, is one that has been shunned by one of my favorite teachers, Chogyam Trungpa, who says, okay, so yeah, I don't understand it, so now let me worship it. Or let's create the fantasy of a thing beyond human conception, and then we'll put our confusion on an altar, and now we've made a god of our insanity. That's what Chogyam Trungpa says, and he's like an asshole and awesome. But I do like to fantasize about, you know, we've got binary computers, right? But now we're going to have quantum computers,
yep.
You know? So it's fun to fantasize about just the possibility. Maybe it really, I mean, one of my favorite things when I have been tripping, or one of my favorite things when I've actually had it, which I haven't really had that much of, but a few times in my life I've had what you would call, what I would consider to be contact with the divine.
Sure.
And every time I have that, one of the first things I think is, this sure as fuck isn't what I thought it was.
Yeah.
And that's always like, oh, wow. I couldn't really ever have come up with
this.
Seems
way beyond what your imagination could
come
up with. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a fun thought, you know, though I'm not saying I don't want to return home.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think there's so much room within. The scale is so big. There's so much room to really accomplish all of the coolness of what you're talking about, but still have the container be so broad that it still fits, that it doesn't break the container and the ultimate. I mean, this is happening over a virtual infinite amount of time. And so the novelty can weave in as many magical ways as you can imagine, you know, because of the virtual infinite amount of time and the infinite recombination and combinations of light that are available to create aliens and these different beings, things that no matter how many infinite universes there are, it's not even mathematically possible that it could be repeated again, which makes the game even more interesting.
Yeah.
You know, like I think it's almost like there's the universe and then we're a universe within the universe. And as the universe condenses light to create forms, we actually do that in our mind all the time. When we think of a Bigfoot, we've just created a pattern of neurons in our brain that have made a little Bigfoot that we can access based upon our memory. That's actually literally light that is combined in a certain way. So we've almost created a little universe in our brain.
Simulation.
At a certain level. So it's just a matter of scale, you know, the universe, part of the megaverse, part of the multiverse, part of the ultiverse, or whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
It just goes on down. It's fractal.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's definitely, You know, first of all, you say the container cannot be broken. That is true. Because there is no fucking container. Because,
right, exactly. Because it's everything.
Yeah, like, there's no, like, I got into this, like, this wonderful, like, conversation at Burning Man, of course, tripping out, talking to this very brilliant human. We're talking about nothing. Inevitably, when you get high enough, you're going to start talking about the binary, right? You're going to start talking about the ones with the zeros, the nothingness, the somethingness, matter, antimatter. You'll start hitting the bedrock of, like, how we conceptualize time and space inevitably. And my friend was like, how do you know everything goes on forever? A pretty fair question to ask. I thought about it for a second. I was like, okay, well then when it stops, how long does the stopping go on for? Because that's forever, you know? So we start hitting up against this like beautiful problem. And so what is the answer, right? To me, I think the answer is to do like what you do. Fucking bundle up some of your pals, fly them out in a plane, take them to Peru, and let them have the conversation. Totally. Whatever it says to them, that's because what are you going to do, man? Really? You know what I mean? At the very best, we're telephone operators in some incredibly complex and advanced system where we're just connecting people at the very best.
Yeah. Our ignorance is inescapable. You know, like there's no way that you could use words and use one experience to make sense for other people. It's subjective to you, to what you believe. Even the visions themselves are a form of communication that makes sense when translated by a specific being.
That's right.
You know, so and that is the difference between the shamanistic spiritual path and like a religious path. Religion is, I will tell you everything. You just have to listen. And the other way is, go find it for yourself, man. Figure it out. Sort it out. Have the conversations. See what the best way for you to deal with demons is. See what the best way for you to find clean love is. Go for it. Like, don't take my word for it.
But have the conversation. I mean, the thing is, like, and I think Christianity it fits into this because Christianity, as much as they would like to tell you what Christianity is, Jesus again and again is saying, pray. Talk to it. Pray ceaselessly. Have the conversation.
Yeah.
Pray. Don't listen to me. I don't know if he said don't listen to me, but he kind of did. It was just like, this is about Abba, my father in heaven. And this isn't like Jehovah. This is daddy. This is like, if you want to understand what's up, then go have the talk.
And all this middleman creation was just a manipulation of power.
That's it.
It's just a way to control the other monkeys and get them to do what you want.
Yeah.
You know, it's because the connection, we have that available.
Yeah.
And then people, you know, we give names. Oh, no, only the Messiah could communicate with the divine. Bullshit. Everybody can. We all carry it inside of us.
That little bit of information there, that I think is a bit of information that is one of the most covered up bits of information in human history. They tried to make it so people couldn't even fucking read the Bible. They didn't want people to even like have access to the text itself. They wanted only priests to have that. Now they don't want people to read the Bible of ayahuasca. They don't want people to read the scripture written in the chemicals of psilocybin and LSD. Now this is the new scripture that they want people to stay the fuck away from. And they do the exact same thing with the scripture that they did in the old days when they found out that some wrong person had a Bible. They put your ass in jail. It's no different. It's the same thing. So really, you know, it's about, we've got to be literate, you know,
and
these books are not just on paper. There's like a lot of stuff that we can read. And what's beautiful about it is the living word of God is not written on paper. It's written in time and space, and it's weirdly going to be written personally to you.
Yeah.
To you. That's what's fucking nuts about it.
Amen to that, my brother.
Praise the Lord. Praise God, Aubrey. God damn it. One of these days I'm going to go to Peru with you, I hope, Aubrey.
Yeah,
I keep putting it off.
What about 1 year from now?
See what we got here. 1 year from now, Thursday, October 6, 2017. I'm already scheduled for a sales convention in Nevada. I'm gonna...
Reno. I got a show in Reno.
I'm going to Reno. But Aubrey, very quickly, I took a look at a clip from this beautiful documentary you created. I had no idea that you were... I guess you talked about it a little bit. I don't know what I thought it was going to look like. This looks fucking great, man. Thanks, this is like a serious... this is like a very serious movie that it looks like you spent a really long time...
Yeah, it took 2 years. And I thought it was going to be an easy one, but it was 2 years, custom soundtrack, full visual effects, and...
Which I listened to in the bathtub, by the way. It's awesome. Very nice soundtrack.
Awesome, yeah. It's at drinkthejungle.com for anybody who wants to check it out. It's free. You just put in your email and you get to stream it, or you can pay $5 and download it. But it was a labor of love. You know, it was hard, like the medicine itself. You know, really challenging. I think it brought, you know, a lot of challenges in the creation. I mean, I thought I was going to be done in 6 months, and it took 2 years, but I'm really proud of it.
How do you not constantly talk about the fact that you're making a jungle documentary?
You know, there's so much going on, and I had so much help and so many good people working on it. And, you know, I don't really feel like any of the things I produce are like mine, you know. It's just a lot of inspiration comes through me, and I get a lot of help, and, you know, I just do my best to put stuff out. But sometimes I guess, you know, maybe I should shout about it a little bit more, but because it's special, you know, and I hope people get a lot from it. Ayahuasca is not for everybody, but I think this is it's a very fair exploration of it. If you're curious of what it is and what it might do, and it's definitely a good place to start and check it out.
Aubrey, where can people find you?
Find me, Aubrey Marcus, everywhere. But check out that documentary, Drink the Jungle. You're going to look at something and look at that. There's some really cool moments there between me and my sister, too. So probably my favorite part of the doc.
Cool, man. Aubrey, it's always a pleasure and always transformational. Thank you for coming all the way up to Pasadena.
Fuck yeah. Dude, I love interacting with your audience so much. Like, you've cultivated such a cool group of people, and we have a huge crossover with our fans, but it's just like in the sea that the internet can become.
Yeah.
Just like hanging out with your people and my people, it's just like a love fest. You know? It's like bathing in sunlight.
It's beautiful. Oh, that's cool. For me, that is my son. And I hope to God or whoever it may be that eventually there won't be any more Aubrey Marcus's or Duncan Trussell's or any like centralized anything at all. Like, the hope will be that we all kind of figure out a way to fuse together as one thing, you know. And I guess that's another topic for another podcast. But in the meantime, man, I know what you mean. I feel very lucky that I get to have
super blessed
any interaction with them at all, because they're the real guru, you know. They're the real teacher.
We all are. We're all just students on the path, and everybody know too. Like, we're all fucked up too. Like, everybody's fucked up. Like, everybody struggles.
Can I address that? Shit. I'm actually not fucked up.
I take offense. I take offense to that.
I just realized how fucking horrible would that be if you took an ayahuasca. How miserable. I don't mean to keep you over, but man, how miserable would it be to drink ayahuasca, and the universe comes to you and it's like, could you help me out, man? Because I'm pretty confused. Like, seriously? Like, I have no fucking idea what I'm doing.
I got,
like,
no plan.
I have this no shit is plan. Chaos. This is an accident. I didn't want to be anything. No offense. Didn't mean to make you. I was trying to make a flying rabbit. And it, like, made humans. Like, this is a fuck up. I fucked up. Do you have any idea what to do here? Because otherwise, I'm going to blow my brains out.
That's happened to somebody, for sure. That's happened to somebody.
Aubrey, I love you, man. Thank you for coming on the show.
Love you guys. Peace.
That was Aubrey Marcus, everybody. You can connect with him over at aubreymarcus.com. A big thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode. Go to squarespace.com and use offer code Duncan to get 10% off a brand new website. And if you have the slightest interest at all, why not go to reddit.com/r/ublacks and check out the Reddit for the Ukrainian branch of the LA Cacophony Society. Of course, that branch is now defunct. We had our last meeting at Gelson's, but who knows, a new branch may emerge soon. And for those of you who are or were in the path of this rotten hurricane blasting against us, I hope you're safe and dry and happy. And I hope that for everyone else too, unless you want to be wet. See you soon. Hare Krishna.